Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. There's a big battle unfolding for turf, for revenue, a battle for you and for your car, or the car that shows up at your door on demand. And it's Detroit versus Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley has the computing chops and a knack for ruining everybody else's business models. Who will build the car of the future with its apps and internet connection? And what about the autonomous car? Detroit says it is ready. This hour on Point, Detroit's big plans to get ahead of the revolution. You can join us on air or online. Have you wrapped your head around what it will mean when your car gets really smart? Do you like that idea? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first this hour from Detroit is Joanne Muller. She is Auto's editor and Detroit bureau chief for Forbes magazine. She's done some great reporting on the new big looming challenge to Detroit, and you can read some of it on our website, onpointradio.org. Joanne, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So U.S. auto sales hit record levels last year, and at the same time, American attitudes about conventional car ownership are shifting. Tell us what you're seeing.
Well, what's happening is, you know, you hear a lot about how young people don't want to own a car anymore. And the fact of the matter is most of them can't afford to own a car. Mm. And they live in cities where it's difficult to park. And so there's definitely a change underway where people want access to cars, but they don't want to own them. And so what we're talking about are things like Uber, Lyft, various car sharing services, where people can get the mobility they want and not have to worry about car ownership. And this is a very big trend we're seeing, just taking shape in the auto industry right now. And it has huge implications for the automakers, as you can imagine.
And how is Detroit reacting?
Well, they're trying to speed up their game. Ford, for instance, is doing a lot of experiments with different business models for car sharing. General Motors just made some huge news a couple weeks ago where they took a 10% stake in Lyft, which is one of the ride sharing companies. And they're doing other things. GM just last week announced that it is starting its own car sharing service called Maven. So they're trying very much to get into the game. And it remains to be seen whether they're moving fast enough, because, as you can imagine, Uber is well out ahead of them, and many other companies in Silicon Valley are looking at the same thing.
You mentioned GM. Here's a promotional video for GM's new car sharing service, Maven.
With car sharing, on-demand ride sharing, and moving into ultimately autonomous cars being delivered to your door. I do believe that there is a future out there where my 8-year-old will never learn how to drive.
In my nearly 30 years at General Motors, I have never seen a period of greater change and possibility.
And yet in the midst of all these changes, car companies are still making a lot of money on traditional cars and trucks. Here's a television advertisement for the 2016 Ram truck.
More people driving Ram trucks than ever before. We've built quite the following. Get a great deal on the best trucks during Ram Truck Month.
So, Joanne Muller, there's a tried and true for Chrysler still selling big across the country.
Well, right now, trucks and SUVs are the thing. And Detroit is smart enough not to abandon where all their profits are coming from. Gas is cheap. People generally in America like to have big vehicles. So in many ways, we're looking like it's the late 90s again when it comes to what's actually selling in dealerships. But what's interesting is that these car makers are really looking 5, 10, 20 years down the road. And there's going to be a very different kind of business, I think.
Right. And so 5, 10 years down the road, is the future then integrating technology into your car, your smartphone with your car, creating this sort of open source software that links your car to your smartphone and then everything that your smartphone can do?
Yeah, I think that's very evident that people want to be able to bring their digital life with them. You know, we all know how dependent we are on our smartphone, right? Whether it's our music, our contacts, our calendar, our access to the internet, you know, when we're having a bar debate with our friends. And so people just want to be able to bring that with them in the car. And up until now, let's face it, the car dashboards have you know, the car makers have tried to make their dashboards more responsive, but they're terrible. And nobody likes the systems that are in their cars today.
So with these dashboards and all the improvements that they're looking ahead to do, maybe Detroit, you say, is taking more the tact of what the experience is for the driver, what the customer wants, not so much about the machinery itself.
Well, I give them all credit for that, because I think when you talk to these companies now, they say, you know, we need to think of ourselves more as mobility companies. We're providing a service, which is getting someone from point A to point B, but we also need to fulfill the rest of their needs. And if that means helping them get some work done on the way to the office, or being able to listen to music that they want, or watch a program even, watch a movie, all of this is coming. And so the automakers are starting to think of the experience that they're providing, not just the hardware.
You mentioned Uber, Joanne. Here's an ad. Uber began expanding rapidly in 2013. The company ran this commercial describing its mission to transform urban transportation into something efficient and simple.
Bringing innovation to this world, which in many cases really hasn't been innovated on in decades, can really bring diversity to a system that hasn't seen a lot of that. So much about cities is how you get around them. If you can bring real efficiency, real convenience, and real comfort to how you move around that city, you can change the way people live in that city.
So is Detroit at risk of being pushed aside, if you will, at least to some extent, by companies like Uber or even Google and Apple?
Well, sure. I think there are some risks. I mean, Uber really is a taxi service, right? It's more of a privately run taxi. It's on demand. You punch a few keys into your phone and boom, the car is there. There's also car sharing, which is more like Zipcar and this new service Maven from GM, where a car is parked somewhere convenient and you can use your smartphone to unlock it and borrow it for a while and bring it back. That is a bit like an old car rental service. So clearly, Detroit has survived taxis and car rental agencies in the past, right? Mm-hmm. They supply the vehicles that that these companies use. Mm-hmm. But what they really need to do, because I think there's a lasting change that's underway, and what they need to do is find a way to be a player in the providing of the service, not just the automobile.
Let's go to that voice now. Joining me from Dearborn, Michigan, Ken Washington, Vice President of Research and Advanced Engineering at the Ford Motor Company, former VP of Space Technology, Advanced Research and Development at Lockheed Martin. Ken, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Jane. It's great to be here.
So the American dream of owning a car used to be the backbone of your business. Now you're contending with cars on demand and a future with autonomous vehicles in it. Is there a new understanding in Detroit that the car of the future has to be different?
I think there's a lot of excitement in not only in Detroit, but everywhere, all over the globe, that people's lives can be made better by not only having car ownership, but by having mobility services. That's why, you know, at Ford, we're really excited about this inflection point that we're facing, where it's not only going to be about providing great cars, trucks, and utilities, but also about being a mobility company, too, where we can help provide these kind of services.
Because Detroit is famous, if you will, for missing the boat many times in the past, most notably with the Japanese automakers. You talk about this inflection point. Are you looking for a new kind of business model to support a new kind of vehicle?
Well, we saw the trends that you've been talking about some time ago, and we started looking at what's happening globally with what's going on with the megatrends of people moving to cities, with the urbanization of areas that are creating these cities that are highly congested. And that led us to begin to experiment not only with technologies, but experimenting with different ways of bringing services to people. So, yes, new business models, but also new technologies in our vehicles and new technologies for enabling people to get from point A to point B. Because it's really about mobility, as you said, not just about car ownership.
Joanne Muller mentioned the lasting change afoot here. In this age of cars on demand, Uber, Lyft, they're cheap. They're always on. No gas money to worry about. No meter to feed. No insurance premiums. I mean, how do you compete with that?
We're not viewing it as a competition. We're really excited about all the technology companies coming to our business, really, and bringing the kind of excitement and energy. And it really validates the fact that we really need to lean into this promise of bringing technology and enabling mobility services. Who better is positioned to solve the pain points of transportation challenges than companies who have been building transportation solutions for over 100 years. And so we think we're well positioned, and we're partnering with technology companies. We're partnering with other people like universities to bring creative technologies to these services so we can help people's lives be better.
Like other automakers, Ford has opened an office in Silicon Valley. We'll talk about this more after the break, but do you need to partner with Silicon Valley, or do you want to own this space on your own?
It's going to be really about partnership. That's why we put this laboratory in Silicon Valley, and we began becoming a part of the environment there. We didn't want to just be visitors. We really wanted to be a member of the community so that we could begin to forge lasting relationships with technology companies. We've interacted with over 200 companies in Silicon Valley over the last year alone. And that has really brought many fresh ideas for how we can put technologies onto our vehicles, technologies into mobility services. It's going to be an exciting future.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about the Detroit locked in a battle with Silicon Valley for control of the future of the car. And you can join the conversation. Detroit has dropped the ball so often in the past. Can they really be quick and nimble enough to beat Silicon Valley at the disruption game this time? Younger listeners, why are you driving? My guest this hour, Ken Washington, Vice President of Research and Advanced Engineering at the Ford Motor Company, and Joanne Muller, Autos Editor and Detroit Bureau Chief for Forbes magazine. This is earlier this month, GM President Dan Ammann spoke on CNN about GM's decision to invest in a car-sharing service, Lyft. He explains the company's decision as a response to growing demand for flexibility in car ownership and transportation.
What our customers are saying is that, you know, a lot of them want to continue with the owner-driver model that they have today, where they buy a car and use it. But there's an increasing group of customers that wants to consume mobility, if you like, in a different kind of way. They want the benefits of car ownership and availability of a vehicle when they want to use one, but without the hassle of ownership or expense of ownership.
And here's Ford CEO Mark Fields at the Detroit Auto Show speaking about Ford Pass, which is supposed to do what iTunes did for music lovers, but for car owners. Ford Pass members who don't have to drive a Ford could use the app to start their cars, call for assistance, pay for parking, and more. Ford will launch Ford Pass in April.
Ford Pass reimagines the entire customer experience. And think of it as a platform of integrated digital, physical, and personal experiences. Today is the start of the next transformation of Ford, becoming an auto and a mobility company.
So, Ken Washington, Ford is no longer just manufacturing automobiles, as you say. You're in the mobility services business. Talk about that. Is that where Detroit needs to go? And with all due respect, with so many stumbles in its past, you know, with innovation, is this transformation in Detroit different this time?
Well, I think what's different this time is that the technologies have really all come together to make new possibilities so much more vibrant and so much more accessible. So it's unmistakable to us at Ford that in our plan to be both a great automaker and a mobility company, that we must partner with partner smartly, and we must embrace these technologies to offer mobility services. And so we began looking at how we would put those services to work for our customers, which is why we began experimenting, because you have to try things, because not all things are going to work. And so it's really important to do that, and that's why we're making progress, and we're excited about making it real for our customers.
Are there things Google and Apple can do that Detroit cannot?
Well, of course there are, and they've been technology companies for a long time, which is why partnering is important. And we work with many technology companies, we work with many universities, and the key is to take the best and knit it all together in ways that creates value. One company can't be one thing, things to everybody, so you have to smartly partner.
Let's get some callers in here. A lot are waiting in line. Dan, you're up first from Austin, Texas. Welcome to the program.
Hi. My comment really is that it feels like Detroit is going to get totally disrupted out of the market. I just drove a Tesla, and I have to tell you, it's so much better than any other car I've ever driven in my life. And they're progressing in technology so much faster. And I remember seeing Bob Lutz laugh at Tesla, very much like Steve Ballmer laughed at the iPhone. And, Apple has $200 billion. They're the richest company in the world, and they're going to be building a car soon. Mm. How does Detroit not get disrupted out?
Dan, thank you. Ken Washington, what do you say to that car customer?
Well, the first thing I'd say is that we share his excitement that companies like Apple and Google and Tesla are bringing exciting emotive products to the market, and it's showing us what's possible, and it's lifting all boats, if you will. And I think we are absolutely up to the task of bringing cars that people are going to love to the market, as we have for many years, but leveraging that to bring technologies with our cars, because we are not new to the business of bringing innovations into our vehicles. We've been putting connectivity into our vehicles for many years, and we'll build on that to create mobility services that people are going to love too.
Dan, thank you. Joanne Muller told us at the top, Ken, about the decline in younger drivers. How do you stay relevant to a new generation of consumers who need and or want their smartphones rather than cars?
Well, I think the key to staying relevant is to take a user first point of view. And we announced that at the auto show that we are looking very seriously and very directly at understanding what users really want and need both in a vehicle and in a mobility service, because you don't want to build something and then try to sell it if it's not addressing a pain point. So we're spending a lot of time listening to customers, including the young generation, to understand what kind of services might they want and need. That's why we started with experimentation with our Go Drive experiment that launched in London almost a year ago. It allowed us to capture insights about what the young people would want and what they would need.
Ken, Joanne, let me introduce another voice into the conversation here. Joining me from Seattle is Chris Ruff. He is CEO and president of UI Evolution, a software company. Clients include Ford and Toyota. Chris, welcome to On Point.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So do you see Google and Apple disrupting the automotive industry?
Well, they're definitely going to bring a change to the market in a pretty dramatic way. I think what the caller said is that I think they're both looking at how they can get pretty deep into the car industry and, in fact, maybe even build their own cars. So I think we're going to see a dramatic change because the market is so large and there's a big opportunity to disrupt it.
So help us understand here. Silicon Valley wants the smartphone to be the brains of the car of the future. Detroit wants the smartphone to be sort of a remote control. Is that right? I mean, how does the driver experience in each of these scenarios differ?
Well, I think we have to look at historic context a little bit. The car is a standalone piece of technology that's been around for hundreds of years. And generally, when there's a big transformation in industry, companies who dominated the first one, let's say the smartphone, like Apple and Google, are not always in a great position to completely take over this new industry. Microsoft was unable to do it in the smartphone. IBM didn't do it in the personal computer. So I think we need to look at how the car is going to be a new product, and that there'll be new companies, new partners coming into the auto industry, helping the auto manufacturer really create a great consumer experience for their products.
Let's hear some sound here. This is an ad 2015 for the Chevrolet Cruze with built-in Wi-Fi connected to the internet through the cell phone company's 4G networks. Here it is.
Cruze offers built-in 4G LTE Wi-Fi with a reliable connection more powerful than your smartphone.
Nice.
So this thing puts out its own signal?
Yes.
What?
It does connect up to 7 devices.
7?
Mm-hmm.
This is awesome. I love this.
This is like next level Chevy.
So, Chris Ruff, you're talking about 4G radio in cars, not Bluetooth, you know, where you sign a contract with a carrier, actually, so you can continually update your car like you'd update the operating system on your smartphone.
Yeah, connectivity is really the key for the future of the car. Once we have connectivity, we can do amazing things. First of all, you can keep the car updated. When we own a smartphone today, we don't expect our smartphone to be dormant. We expect it to keep getting new applications, updated applications, fix bugs, improvements, all of those things. Connectivity will allow for that. The second thing connectivity does, which is really important for transforming the user experience, is it brings data back from the car that the auto manufacturers can use to make a better product. Because it is about trial, and it is about error, and it is about innovation. And to do that, you have to test, and you have to test the data, and you have to look at the data and bring those improvements back to the car. And connectivity is the only way to do that.
So connectivity is the key. Well, if the 4G, the LTE, is the pipeline, the gateway to the internet, how do cellular carriers then play into this, looking down the road? I mean, does AT&T or Verizon own a part of the profits when you have this sort of a business model?
Well, I think that's sort of up to the partnerships that get struck in the industry. I think at its heart, the AT&T's, Verizon's of the world, they're going to provide that backbone. They do it for smartphones. They're going to do it for everything that is the internet of tomorrow. The car manufacturers, at the end of the day, I think still own that vehicle, and they own the services that come into that vehicle, and they just partner their way to get the connectivity that they need.
And so, Ken Washington from Ford, does that mean, in theory, you'd really like to cut out the mobile carriers, build your own network, charge Netflix or Amazon or whomever for access to your drivers?
Well, I think it's going to be, again, an area of important partnerships. So AT&T, for example, is our strategic partner for providing 4G networks in our vehicles with our Sync Connect product. It allows you to, as was said, connecting the vehicle onto the Internet of Things. And that's going to change the experience, and it's going to provide value across the whole value chain.
Let's get Craig in here from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Hi, Craig. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jen.
Hi.
These cars are an absolute safety hazard. The chip keys can fail. The clickers can fail, dependent on button batteries. Imagine a mother with kids and she can't get into her car. The car should have regular keys, one door on each side, and a back door that can unlock with regular keys. I have a report going to the National Highway Safety Administration about this mess that they're creating. The dashboard is a nightmare of technology. It's going to be very distracting. These things are going to fail. This technology can fail, and then you can't even drive your car. You can't even get into it. What if it's cold and the kids start running out?
I hear you. A lot of issues to work out, Craig. Thanks so much for your call. Ken Washington, even if we can build these kind of smart cars, should we, to Craig's point about safety?
Well, you know, first of all, we take safety very seriously at Ford, and as all automakers do, and it's really important to us that as we bring technology into vehicles, that we do complete testing, so that you have, for example, redundancy in doing the key entry, and you do have a physical key that you can use on many of our vehicles, and so. Safety is really critical, and it's paramount. And so whenever there's a disruption that's like the disruptions that are happening today with connectivity and data and analytics and alternative mobility modes, you have to overlay onto that all the appropriate security and safety actions to ensure that you can bring these innovations to your customers safely.
Here's an email from Dave in Boston. He says, this effort to put phone connections and entertainment centers in the car is really dangerous. In my 2014 Escape, I find myself constantly having to interact with the car, taking my attention off the road. This notion of hands-free is nothing of the sort. Joanne Mueller, let me come back to you. Who do you think is out front, safety aside, moving on to sort of the bigger Detroit picture here? Who's out in front on these changes in Detroit, would you say? Who's been nimble with change, as you see it?
Well, I think that all of them have done different things in different ways. I think General Motors has definitely had the lead on bringing the 4G LTE hotspot to cars. They brought it through OnStar, which you may remember, you know, has been around for 20 years.
Right.
You know, it started out as the kind of thing that would help you, you know, if you were in a crash or something. And now it's it's their pipeline and their platform for which all their apps are going to reside on the car. Ford, likewise, has had Sync for a long time. They started out with Microsoft. Now they're with, Ken, remind me, is it QNX now?
Yeah.
Okay, but the point is that Sync is also a platform, and Ford has opened up its platform so that others can now build upon it. So who's in front? You know, I mean, I would look at Volvo or Mercedes or companies like that. You know, they are working very hard to bring the autonomous features and connected features. I mean, ultimately, what we're talking about here is the safer cars of the future, right? And we're trying to, as the caller, you know, mentioned, he's worried about, you know, all of this being distracting. Mm-hmm. And I would agree 100%, frankly. Right now, I think the automakers, frankly, have done a terrible job of building a user-friendly interface on their dashboards. You have to push buttons or screens through layers and layers of software. And this is where the big threat is, I think, because you look at Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, these are both in the last year, have become, a lot of car makers are now putting this into their dashboards a little bit reluctantly, frankly, because it opens the door for Apple and Google. But what it does is it allows you to project the familiar icons that you already have on your screen, on your phone, smartphone, that is, right onto the screen in your car, which is great if you want to be able to, you know, use those functions. The problem is, and this is where the car makers get a little freaked out, is that if they project this onto their screen, it then takes over the screen. And now if you want to control the climate system or other sort of auto-related functions that you used to do on your dashboard, you have to, you know, toggle through all of this. And that's a pain. Mm. So some car makers really, that's one thing they have to work on. If they're going to allow Apple CarPlay and Google Auto, or Android Auto, rather, in their cars, they have to find a way to do it so that you can still operate the car functions. And ultimately, in my view, voice is where all this comes together. If you have a good voice system with a good microphone, you can't cut corners on the microphone in the car, which is what some car makers have been doing to save money. You have to be able to talk and interact with your car without taking your hands off the wheel. You can have everything projected onto the dashboard, or the windshield, rather. Heads-up displays are coming back in a very big way. And I think we're moving toward safer operation and being able to use your functions at the same time.
Chris Ruff, the voice recognition that Joanne mentions, it's like Amazon coming out with that Echo, I think, over the Christmas holiday, right? Something like that in the auto industry is ahead.
Yeah, I think voice is a significant technology that needs to be continually invested in. If we can create an interface where people can leave their eyes on the road, that makes it all better for the driver, makes it safer. One other point of clarification. I mean, right now, the most unsafe thing going on in cars, though, is smartphone usage. And so as we all partner together to try to make a safer car, if we can keep those phones away from the driver by more tightly integrating their application experiences into the car, that's a win for all of us.
This On Point podcast is made possible by Squarespace. If you have a passion that you obsess over, if it keeps you up at night, if you live for it, you should show it off. With easy-to-use tools and templates, Squarespace websites help you capture every detail of what drives you. Because if it's worth the effort, it's worth showing to the world. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com. When you're ready to purchase, use the one-word offer code ONPOINT to save 10%. You should. Squarespace.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're looking ahead to the day when your car becomes what one of our guests called the third screen of life. And you can join the conversation. Do you see a day when your smartphone is essentially a remote control for your car? And do you want that? My guests are Ken Washington in Dearborn, Michigan, Vice President of Research and Advanced Engineering at the Ford Motor Company, Chris Ruff, CEO and President of UI Evolution in Seattle, and Joanne Muller, Autos Editor and Detroit Bureau Chief for Forbes Magazine in Motor City. Ken Washington, let me ask you about autonomous cars. President Obama's proposed budget for the next fiscal year includes $4 billion to be spent over the next 10 years for research on autonomous cars. The New York Times reported last week that there's been talk of a Ford-Google partnership to build autonomous cars. How do they fit into the future in Detroit and in Ford's future?
Well, first, let me just say a word about you know, voice and distraction and that we were just talking about.
Okay, good.
Because I think it plays into what we're going to talk about regarding autonomy, and that is the technology that is now possible is bringing new opportunities for us to keep our eyes on the road and hands on the wheel. And that includes advanced voice recognition and integrations with technologies like the Amazon Cloud that we showed at the electronics show early this year, and driver assist features where the vehicle can alert you when things happen in and around you so that you can be a better and a safer driver. And so, yes, technology brings complexity to the vehicle, and we're going to work through getting much better at bringing solutions in the face of that complexity. But the technology also brings the ability to be better and safer drivers because of sensors on the car and because of advanced software that integrates signals from those sensors. Mm. And that gets us into this future of autonomy.
Mm. And so what do you see in the future as far as Ford? I mean, is it the top of your list? Is it at the headline there? I mean, you know, what do you see?
It's absolutely critically important to us, and this is not a new thing for us. We set out on our journey to bring autonomous vehicles to the masses more than 10 years ago, when we were the first automaker to participate in the DARPA challenge. So we set our journey at that time, and it's continued to progress and advance ever since. This year, we're tripling our autonomous vehicle research fleet, which is going to accelerate the pace of progress for our ability to bring autonomy to the masses. So our goal is to have fully autonomous vehicles available within the next 4 years. We believe that technology is absolutely possible, and that's going to allow us to make people's lives better with autonomous vehicles.
4 years. Let's go to Caroline in Jasper, Iowa. Caroline, welcome to the program. Hello.
Hi, Jane.
Hello. Go ahead.
Well, I'm a truck driver.
Okay.
And I was listening to your show, and I disagree with the previous caller who said, you know, that those autonomous cars are dangerous. What I see every day people doing in a car is outrageous and how dangerous that is. So I very much look forward to autonomous cars, and they have got to be safer. So I know that they're also looking at autonomous trucks, which I think there's a lot of other issues with that. But the autonomous cars, I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait for it.
All right, Caroline, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Jeff in Roslindale, Massachusetts. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to On Point.
Hey, Jane. How you doing?
Hey, good. Go ahead.
So I think the technology makers need to focus on making so touch feedback. We lose touch feedback. So everything's on a screen. It's a piece of glass. Every time we touch a button, it's the same as touching, you know, turning your volume up feels like a piece of glass. Like making a comment on a, you know, popular sharing app is the same. You know, hitting next. We miss that touch feedback. And if they can make the tactileness with like nanotechnology or something, if you're driving a car, you're going to have this technology in there. Like, I miss buttons. I miss the radio. I miss the knobs. I miss the play button. Like, we lose that sense, and I think part of our brain is lacking.
Hmm. All right, Jeff, thank you for your perspective. Walter in Austin, Texas. You're on the air. Welcome.
Well, hi, Jane.
Hi.
My feedback, I own a Tesla and have been driving a Tesla for a while. My wife owns a Leaf. There's no doubt in my mind when I take a look at this technology that it's safer than humans driving. But it's not ready for prime time at this point. They're still working on it. My feeling with the driverless car with a Tesla right now is it's kind of like letting your 16-year-old drive your car. It's still a work in progress, but it does work. One of the things is it saved a number of people from accidents. But the other side of it is if I'm driving down the road and there's a shadow from a bridge, the car will possibly just apply its brakes because it thinks that there's something there. So, you know, it's not quite ready for prime time, but the other thing is there's software issues in when you take a look at Tesla, they're more of a technology company.
Right.
When you take a look at the big automakers, especially like Toyota, they're an automaker first and technology second. So they mash together all of these different things, some written by outside third parties, some written by other manufacturers, and they try to make it all work together. And there are known real safety issues in those vehicles, like in the the Prius from 2005 through 2011, there's a known braking problem that has caused over 100 accidents, and they're fighting it all the way to the Supreme Court at this point rather than acknowledge and fix the problem. So there's real issues where the automakers have to think more like a software company than an auto manufacturer. Otherwise, it gets dangerous.
Walter, got it. Thank you so much. Ken Washington, I'll go back to you. You talk about the goal of 4 years to bring autonomous vehicles to the market here. It just makes me wonder when it comes to rolling out new products. I guess it would be fair to say that Detroit has not had a reputation as being as fast and agile as Silicon Valley for doing that. And I'm wondering about the corporate culture that slowed Detroit down in years past. Is that generation gone? Can you innovate faster?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to recognize, and I'll just reflect back to some of the earlier discussion we had around safety, that these are very complex pieces of hardware that you're entrusting your life to. And so there is a very careful and very methodical process that we use to ensure that when we release our products that they meet all the required standards and we're not putting people in harm's way, because these things they can be potentially dangerous. And so it does take time. But at the same time, the software technology that is now being developed for the future of autonomous vehicles is, to the earlier caller's point, it's basically a software project. It's a software and a hardware integration project, and we've built a team that knows how to do that, and that team is building that capability. And the fact that they sit and work and interact with the same with their colleagues that know how to integrate that into a vehicle that you're going to drive or put your life at risk in is really important, because then we can then pull all that together and make it all work well.
Here's a new ad campaign that we pulled from General Electric. It's a good illustration of the big disruptive change that the auto industry has to go through, turning a car from brawny to brainy and hiring a new generation of young software writers to do it. The ad follows Owen, a new grad who's been hired as a programmer by GE, but his parents just don't get it, and his father proudly hands him a sledgehammer.
Proud of you, son. GE, manufacturer.
Well, that's why I dug this out for you.
It's your grandpappy's hammer, and he would have wanted you to have it.
It meant a lot to him.
Yes, GE makes powerful machines, but I'll be writing the code that will allow those machines to share information with each other. I'll be changing the way the world...
You can't pick it up, can you? Go ahead. He can't lift the hammer.
It's okay, though. You're going to change the world.
So, Chris Ruff, you hear that. We hear what Ken Washington says. Yes. You know, Silicon Valley says, well, we've got to do it. Ken Washington says, yes, do it, but do it safely. You know, what's the rub here? How do you see it?
Well, I don't think it's either or. I do agree with Ken that the auto manufacturer's first goal is safety, and it's been that way for a long time. I am seeing some pretty important trends, though, happening. We've been in the industry about since 2011, and the speed at which software is being developed and reintroduced to the car is speeding up on a yearly basis. to try to keep up with consumer demands. Consumers expect their products to continually improve, and the software is the way to do it. The other thing is software improvements are also about safety. One of the callers mentioned that there's bugs in these systems. Tesla has them. But then if we can connect to those cars, we can continue to update those cars and make them better and better over the life of the ownership.
So are Detroit lead times fast enough, would you say?
They're not fast enough today, no. But they are improving, and like Ken mentioned, they're going to improve in a safe way. And I do see them competing with Silicon Valley.
Let's get Dave in here from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Dave. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Jane.
Hi.
I have a lot of questions about the infrastructure. Public roads and interstates are handmaiden to the success of the American automobile company. Americans spend a lot of money on roads. And I just wonder if, let's say, if we need to put wires under the roads, or if a satellite goes down that an autonomous car is linked to, what happens if if the electric company sets up a temporary construction zone that isn't on Google Maps? Who pays to park these car sharing autonomous cars? Who pays for the parking spots?
Mm-hmm.
Who puts the fuel in an autonomous car?
Dave, a lot of questions to answer. Ken Washington, I'll put that to you. Public roads and infrastructure, how does that piece play into this?
Well, it's a great question, because that answering that question is what led us to on a path to develop autonomous vehicles that don't rely on infrastructure. Because as the caller indicated, the infrastructure can change, things happen, you know, electrical companies put up signs, and all kinds of things can happen to the environment. And so the vehicle needs to have not only a pre-existing high-resolution map of the environment, but it needs to have onboard sensing capability to see what's around it at that moment. And then it compares the two and does some, you know, fairly sophisticated integration to then make the right decisions about how to navigate and how to navigate safely. And that's why it's a hard problem. And so the earlier comment about seeing a shadow and then applying your brakes, those kind of examples are examples that you need to work through and develop improvements to, so that you can truly take the human out of the loop once you're ready to put a vehicle on into service to take people autonomously where they need to go.
What about government regulations, Ken Washington, and restrictions on car emissions, which will only get tougher in the years to come? How are you dealing with that? And does this compel you to maybe move more toward software and mobility services?
Our commitment in providing vehicles today to our customers, you know, we're not viewing this as an or. We're looking at this as an and. We're expanding our business model to have a foot in today and a foot in tomorrow. And so with our core business, our foot in today, we have to work with the whole industry to continue to meet the government regulation standards, but also have a shared conversation about how they need to evolve given the changes that are happening in the world. So it's a conversation that the whole industry needs to have. So our participation in government with industry affiliations and having conversations with government agencies is a part of our normal core business.
Let's get James in here from Midland, Texas. Hi, James. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I think that both industries are probably at the tops of their games. I've always liked Detroit's cars. I've always liked the Silicon Valley's computers. I think that they should play to their strengths, you know, allow space inside the car for the technology sector to move in a little bit, but not give the whole car over. Likewise, I think that the computer industry could bend itself a little bit more to car technology.
Back to that need for partnership, James. Thank you so much for the call. Last question, Ken Washington, for you, Vice President, Ford Motor Company. You've traditionally had one customer, right? You've sold to car dealers. With all these changes going on around you, technology exploding, who are your customers of the future?
Well, I mean, you said it well, which is, you know, the business model is evolving. So our view of the future is there's this whole other sector of providing transportation services. You know, the current business, our core business, serves services the core market of selling cars. And traditionally, we sold a car, we serviced it, we financed it, and, you know, 5 to 7 years later, we'd perhaps sell another one to the same customer. And there's this whole life cycle of car usage, and there's this whole life cycle of mobility service. So we're seeing our customers as the person who bought the vehicle and now is using it, but also the customer who needs to use a vehicle or use a transportation or a mobility service, and everything in between.
Chris Ruff, you talked about the different technologies that are out there, stuff that's coming. I mean, there's so many interesting things on the horizon. Payment technology would be built into your car. Your car would be like an Apple Pay, right? What's the most exciting to you? What do you see on the future that's just really blows your socks off?
Well, I do think the bringing some of these advanced features from the smartphone into the car is a big opportunity. It'd be great to pull up to a Starbucks and pay for my coffee by not getting my phone and handing it to them. And we can enable that in the cars of the future. Autonomous driving gets me pretty excited because all of a sudden the car can have a completely different experience for the driver and their passengers. Different types of engagement can happen. On the road to autonomy, though, I think people shouldn't be scared of the fact that the driver won't be able to take back control of the car at any time. And then finally, electric vehicles are a huge opportunity and are really sort of core to driving all of this. That's the way we get to the emission standards we want and get to a much better, safer product.
Joanne Muller, about 20 seconds here. This month we had the Detroit Auto Show showing off its newest vehicles. We also had in Las Vegas the Consumer Electronics Show, where the automakers put on a big show. Which event is now more important for the auto industry, would you say?
Believe it or not, I believe the Consumer Electronics Show is becoming an auto show, at least for the future technologies. Absolutely. I learned a ton there and saw a lot of great technology coming. The world is changing.
Sure is. Thanks for talking about it with us this hour. Joanne Muller, autos editor from Forbes magazine. Appreciate your time, Joanne. Thanks.
Thank you.
Chris Ruff, CEO and president of UI Evolution Software Company out of Seattle. Chris, thank you.
Thank you.
And Ken Washington, Vice President of Research and Advanced Engineering at the Ford Motor Company. Ken, thank you very much for your time.
It was my pleasure.
I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.